Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Carol Becker. Carol Becker has founded and run numerous companies over the last 30 years and now runs Improving Sales Performance, a consultancy that supports sales organizations to build high-performing teams and achieve their revenue goals. He is the author of Set Up to Win, Three Frameworks to a High-Performing Sales Organization, and Sales and Marketing Alignment. He has a BA in Economics from Colorado College and an MBA from the University of Colorado Boulder. You can learn more about Carol and his work at improvingsalesperformance.com. And with that, Carol, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for some time now.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
Well, you're welcome, man. We got to give a shout out to Candace Snyder. Candace is a wonderful podcaster herself, and she revels in matching up her guest with podcast hosts who she thinks her guests will resonate. She introduced us. We had a great pre-chat, and here we are today. And the only thing that we didn't accomplish in the pre-chat was getting you to go to the human being in Loveland. That's the only thing we didn't get to, but I'm sure there's going to be plenty of time for that.
Yeah, that coffee shop in Loveland, I need to go check out in Loveland, Colorado. So a shout out to that company too.
You got it. And I want a full report once you do.
You got it.
All right. So I guess we might as well get right down to it. So my first question for you is, tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, I think a lot of us listening, especially if you're in sales, you might not have had a traditional trajectory. And that is me. Even when I was a little kid, school wasn't a good fit. I wasn't one of those academic learners. And for that matter, we moved around a lot when I was a kid. So I didn't ever really have kind of a place of connection. And so being entrepreneurial, I didn't know it at the time, but being maybe just a creative kid, I kind of created my own reality. And what I meant by that is I don't color in the lines. As much as I wish I could, my brain just doesn't work that way. And I think a lot of us out there, you know, we created other muscles, whether you call it EQ or just I'm a good communicator, I'm a people person. I know how to like do things on my own. I don't read instructions. Like we all probably have come up with some sort of coping mechanism, if you will, or you know, said in a positive way, a way that works for us. And that's kind of like my life journey. I went to the traditional schools and have degrees, but I got to tell you, I was the type of guy that was bored in school. And when I read, I can't stay focused. And one something I learned as I got older through the lens of my children is that I have what's called stealth dyslexia. And so reading is really hard for me. I've written 3 books. So what does that mean? It means like, I think we all have the ability to navigate the world how we want, what works for us. And hopefully you have a support structure in your life that encourages that. And so if you're hearing this, that's kind of my journey. My journey was one that's not traditional. I kind of had to invent as I went along, because going to school, doing the homework, you know, I was doing homework till late at night and on the weekends just to keep up. And it was horrible. But guess what? When I went door to door to sell Girl Scout cookies with my sister or to mow lawns or whatever it might be, whatever contest at school, I just killed it. And so the idea is, for me, I got where I was probably because of some luck and just confidence in myself that, you know, just because it doesn't work like this doesn't mean I can't still get to the summit of that mountain. And so my journey has really been one of, you know, luckily I'm creative, I'm personable. I think I learned at an early age how to connect with people because it wasn't natural to me. And since the traditional way of anything wasn't natural, I kind of probably strengthened that muscle. And you fast forward, and I think that's how a lot of people are entrepreneurs or in sales, or maybe they do podcasts because they have another skill that wasn't traditional and they brought it forward And that's how they kind of navigated the world. And that's me.
Traditional educational settings aren't for everybody. I think it's important. I mean, as a teacher myself, is we have to teach the way individuals learn, not teach from our own perspective. And I know a lot of individuals who have creative minds, color outside the lines,
yeah,
don't do well in traditional school settings. They get bored. It's almost as if they've heard this information before and they want something more. So we measure intelligence and capability different for those individuals. For me, one of the knocks against standard intelligence tests is the fact that they're standardized. One size does not fit all. We have to measure intelligence by the specific individual differences that the individual portrays and their specific unique capabilities that aren't measured through paper and pencil tests or through traditional lecture settings in school.
Exactly. And you will take a little peek into what I do. What you said is, you know, I heard meeting that student where they are, learning, teaching them in a way that aligns to their learning style. Sales to me is just helping someone understand a situation and a path forward, like a solution. It's helping someone realize that there's a challenge. And then if they're open to listening to you and you have the answer, a path forward. And I think a lot of times we want to get to, well, what's the sales process? What's the way we go A, B, C, D, E? And what you just said about students and learning is no different about communicating with other individuals and people. You know, we're all wired differently. And to be able to meet somebody where they are in the business setting or in a family setting around communication is very similar as a teacher of trying to unlock that person or come to them with a way that fits them. And I think that's how we can be of service to others, if we can identify how to show up to align with them the best. And you just happen to do it through education.
And you happen to do that through sales. I imagine that there's a good amount of preparation with each client that you meet. You need to understand their strengths, their weaknesses. And my guess is that you tailor your approach based on their aptitudes, their strengths, their weaknesses, or you also find out what really motivates them, what really gets them charged up. My guess is that you teach organizational teams to kind of find the sweet spot with each individual and appeal to them from that perspective. Am I correct?
Wow. You said it better than I could. You nailed it. Yeah. I'll tell you a really quick story. Like I was coaching an individual salesperson and his results were up and down, like not consistent. Like he was consistently doing well, but if you saw a line, it looked like a wave going up, right? And the owner of the company would always meet with me. He's like, I don't get this guy. What's up? And one day in my one-to-one, I said, you know what? We're not going to do all the kind of traditional who's in your pipeline, how you're going to sell, what's stuck, what's a blocker. I want to ask you a question. What do you play for in your life? Like, why are you doing this? Yeah. And this guy actually took a long time to answer. And he said, you know what? I'm first generation American. When we moved here, my parents were farm workers. And luckily, this family kind of took me under their wing and they helped me get educated and let me go to school with their children. And I'm in a place now where I've got a girlfriend and she has a kid and I want to eventually get married and help raise that child. And I want to buy a house and I really want to create stability. I said, is that what you're playing for? He goes, I guess it is. And so we started to change every meeting that we had, not about, hey, how are you going to close this? Are you going to meet your goal? But how are you coming to living the life that you want and what's getting in the way? And what we did is we really worked on what I would call like his inner game. Like sales is so hard because you put yourself out there all the time. And many careers are like that. But if you're somewhere where you've got to bring who you are authentically every day, and people might say yes or no, or, you know, give you a cold shoulder, or maybe they're just having a rough day and you have to learn to not take it personally, then your own battery needs to keep getting recharged if you're going to keep living like that. And that's what was happening. It wasn't that he wasn't selling and he wasn't good. He was getting worn out. And that's what those waves look like. He'd work really hard, then he'd get worn out, then he'd recharge. And so we started to kind of smooth that out. And sure enough, his performance smoothed too. So I think so much of being a human being is about kind of understanding what's going on within your own mind and body, an environment you're in. And so for sales teams, I think we need to break the myth that everybody has to sell the same way. Kind of like with education, right? Like, let's find the way to make this team fit together, just like a soccer team or a football team. Like, you're going to be in different positions around the field. Organizational sales team design is no different. And we all have our inner game and our team-based game. So yeah, I love what you said. It is about going in with a fresh perspective and saying, you don't necessarily have a broken organization or broken people. We just haven't figured out how to like bring out the best. And it doesn't mean sometimes we don't have to let some folks go, but more times than not, there's other things we can be doing to start to improve the overall culture and performance of a team. And that's what I found. And that's actually where I get a lot of my satisfaction too.
Well, and like you said, I think when you take a look at it from a systems perspective, you're not blaming any one person in the system. You're taking a look, how can we tweak the system? And then once you've gotten input from the organizational personnel and administration in terms of how we can best tweak this, then you put individuals in positions on that team where they can succeed.
That's right.
You maximize their strengths. I learned about teams through a very wise mentor that I had when I worked as an addictions counselor. Carl, this guy was an ex-Navy SEAL commander and a social worker. How's that for a combination?
That's crazy.
Yeah. He was the best clinician and administrator I saw wrapped into one. And in the human service profession, you don't get that combination. It's either one or the other. You either get a good administrator or a good therapist. But it's very rare that a good therapist becomes a good administrator because it requires a different set of skills that the organization didn't provide an adequate amount of training for before they promoted that person. So, and what he did is very much like your approach. You know, he organized a team. He knew what all of our strengths were. He put us in a position where we succeeded, where we complemented each other, and we got the job done. And we worked with some very clients that colored outside of the box, very creative, very, you know, very different. A lot of clients that a lot of therapists wouldn't want to work with because they were anti-authority and they had a variety of other different issues, but you know, it worked because we knew how to approach him. He constructed the team that allowed us to best meet those needs. And I imagine it's got to be like that in sales as well, too.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that you said with the administrator versus a clinician is no different. Like one of the mistakes, and it's not always mistakes, but like best practices, it's usually not the best thing to take your very best salesperson and turn them into your VP of sales or your sales manager. They're very different skills. Yet it's so, you're like, oh, this person's so good. They can, maybe they'll spread their magic across everyone else. And what you're really doing potentially is taking this person out of like their zone of genius, what they're really good at, and asking them to be something that they don't want to do or they're not really wired for. And maybe they think they want to do it. But if, to your point, you haven't helped them understand the skills required, you're going to put some risk out there that you could have controlled if we just got a little bit more intentional about things. A lot of what I do is telling business owners, there isn't a quick fix. But if you're open to creating, you know, like a safe culture, a collaborative culture, you know, not micromanaging, just learning to be calm in the stress of this, which is really hard as a business owner when your neck's on the line and you're trying to make payroll. It's super hard. I've been there. But like, that's where breakthrough starts to happen. And you start to empower or enable a team to come forward. And ultimately, that's kind of the place I live in, because many of my clients, if they don't start to get out of their own way, they're always going to be on that hamster wheel. They're always going to be stressed out. And plus the team, you're not really giving them the freedom or the power for them to be the best they can be. And that's kind of, you know, so much of what I think good leadership is, good teaming is. Probably the Navy SEAL brought that. It's that type of thing, that it's not just a checklist of, did you do these things?
Yeah, he put us in positions to succeed. He gave us a job, stayed out of our way so we could do the job. And he was always available to us as a resource. He never micromanaged. He just said, this is what I need done. He was very clear with his objectives. We got the job done, and he was always there to support us and to provide the resources that we needed. If he was in corporate, Carl, he would have probably been very successful, because he would have applied those same principles to the corporate world, and they would have reach their bottom line and reach their organizational mission, you know, threefold.
Yeah, that's great.
So I saw on your website, improving sales performance, Lycit's mission is to build high performing sales organizations based on strong foundations, positive cultures, and intentional growth. How does this mission specifically, from your perspective, drive improved sales performance?
Yeah. It's one of those things, like if you're a business person, or maybe you're in a company, and I ask you this question, hey, if I went and talked to let's say you're a manufacturing company or catalog company, if I went to the guys working on the docks If I went to your drivers, if I went to the receptionist, if I went to accounting, if I went to sales, if I went to anybody that worked at the company and said, hey, how do we create value? Am I going to get the same answer? Then if you went to your sales team and let's say you had five salespeople and you said, hey, how do we create value? Are you going to get the same answer? And what I've found more times than not is, yeah, we might get in the ballpark if we're lucky, but a lot of times people don't have a clear answer. So if you think about any time you buy something, every time there's a risk element, let's say you go into a store and the salesperson kind of ignores you, or they look at you and they're like, I'm not sure you could afford this, or whatever vibe you get, or you can't find the merchandise you want, or you ask the question and the guy just picks up the box and reads the back of it and says, yeah, it works. And you're like, that's not what I was asking. Every time there's a place that creates doubt or frustration for you, it's harder and harder for you to go, I should be doing this thing. And that's everything in life, right? Like a relationship, how, you know, visiting your parents, whatever. If there's all these like little weird friction points is what I call them, then it's really hard to have an optimal experience. So if you get back to a team, we all need to know where we're going. We all need to say the same thing. And we all need to kind of live whatever that value is. And that gets deeper to core values, our mission. Why do we even work? How do we want to show up for our clients or our customers? Are we super customer centric? Do we do everything we possibly can, like maybe a really great waiter or a really high service restaurant? Or are we more like a buffet where we're just like, well, that's what you get. I'm sorry. You know, we're out of pizza. The pepperoni will come out in 30 minutes. But if you want the vegetarian, help yourself. Like, who are we? And so that's really important. And I call those foundations because if you think about like your own selling ecosystem, you've got everything digital that we know what that means, right? And we have the people connection. But if those things aren't jiving, if those aren't aligned, you already have some risk points that we can start to remove really easily by getting everyone on the same page, if we want to kind of use that phrasing. And so, you know, part of the first mission is like getting these foundations knocked out so everyone's on the same page. We're playing the same game. Yeah. And then we kind of start to go, well, who do we sell to and what's important to them? And are we aligned? Because again, if we're in sales or any business, we have something we're trying to solve. We create value, we create our revenue by creating, you know, a solution for somebody, making their life better, whatever it might be. And so for me, you know, does this all really help? Because just getting people on the same page alone helps. And then you start to talk about the teams and, you know, are they all living the core values? Do they understand them? Does the leaders in this organization, are they authentic? Are they willing to be vulnerable? Are they willing to listen? Kind of like your Navy SEAL example, right? And if they're not, here's the good news. If they're willing to, then there's a really healthy path forward where you're going to start to unlock success. And you're going to wake up one day and be like, wow, my team's doing this. I didn't have to work all weekend, you know, if you're a small business. So in doing that, I think most sales organizations and most people, they don't go into work going, I'm going to do a bad job today. I want to be unhappy. They don't say that. They might be unhappy. They might end up doing a bad job. But if we can start to create a different culture, a different way of being and feel more trusted and more just wanted, if you will, appreciated, empowered, that culture can start to change and your customers feel it. Your team's going to be more efficient. They're going to be happier. They're not going to come in late because Bob's such a jerk. They're going to come in early and maybe bring Bob a cup of coffee. So yeah. A lot of this just feels like being a good human. And a lot of it is also just probably common sense if we could take a step back. And so often I think with everything in our lives, we're so in it that to have a consultant like me or a friend or a therapist take an outsider's view and look in and say, this is what I'm seeing. That's where you can start to make change within your own life or your own business. So that's kind of the whole ethos of this is like foundations first, start working on how humans work, how people lead, get clear on all these things. And then a lot of really good things happen. And that's when we can get like a lot more strategic, tactical, like really start to put our foot on the gas. At least then you have a car that's working, you know, all the tires are balanced, the engine's tuned versus, you know, going down the road with a flat tire kind of, and the car's not fully working. Which I think a lot of us has probably experienced working at a company like that. It's not fun.
No, it isn't. And I like the fact that you emphasize foundations, because if we don't have those firm foundations in terms of what it is we want to accomplish, are those foundations aligned with the values of those team members, we're going to be spinning our wheels. And the other thing that I like, and it, that occurred to me, is that once we're aware of what our values and our core values are, we're going to attract clients who mirror that.
That's right.
And one of the things that occurred to me is that maybe that's one of the reasons why sales can get to be challenging, is that our core values don't align with the values of the customers that we're trying to attract. And it's going to be like that hamster just continuing going on that wheel, spinning around and going no place.
For sure. Well said. I can remember this. I was speaking at a conference and it was very much this kind of theme. So I was really shocked. This guy calls me up a couple of weeks after the conference. He sets an appointment on my calendar and he starts talking to me about how he wants me to come in and kick everybody's butt and kind of like get them all in shape. And a lot of other words like that. It was a pretty it felt like maybe the Sopranos. It was pretty heavy handed of this guy, you know? And I just kept thinking, how does this guy associate me with that? I gave him one of my books at the conference. Like he heard me speak. Like, where is he picking up that I'm going to come in and clean house and, you know, beat people up and kick them in the butt? Like I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get the results by bringing the team together, unlocking what's going on. And then I started to realize, you know, he actually might've been the problem. You know, and potentially they made a bad hire with this guy. We ended up not working because it would have been a disaster. Like I would not have been able to be me, deliver the value that I deliver. And he probably wouldn't have gotten what he liked because I would be getting to know the team before I went in. And I think there's a lesson in there of just kind of like being able to be patient in a situation, understand the situation. This gets to my book, Iceberg Selling, which is the whole idea is like, we only see about 10% like an iceberg, if you think about the movie, in it, right? And the more you can see the 90% under, you can make informed decisions. You can show up in a way that aligns like we talked at the beginning of the call. And so that's kind of where I was with this guy. I was like, you know, you can't just jump in and start cleaning house if we don't know what's under the surface. There might be a problem that's not these people. It's something else. And if we get rid of all these people, that other problem's still there.
And that's where a good organizational assessment comes into play, particularly if you have a new person joining the ranks or you're revamping your organizational mission. That's time to do good organizational assessment, get input from your team to see what's working, what needs to be tweaked, improve your systems, and then go from there. The other thing is that nobody who is intelligent, who has a modicum of self-esteem, is ever going to be motivated to change through fear. That never worked with me when any of my supervisors tried to do that with me, because it was just, to me, a baseless tactic designed to scare you. And I've been motivated because I believed in the mission, not because I was scared of it, but because I believed in it.
Very well said. I mean, if you think about human potential, right? When does work not feel like work? You know, when do you bring out your best? How do you create an environment like that versus, you know, when do you hate your job or even hate the chores you're doing around the house, or when it feels forced and not natural and not appreciated, and that there's some monster that's going to get you or some bad thing that's going to happen if I don't do that? It's very hard to maintain that energy when it's not filling you up. But at least it is for me. And so I do think in sales is such a game of being in, you know, getting out of your head and trying to be really present with the people in front of you, whether it's online or in person or on a phone call or at a trade show booth or whatever it might be, that if you're not able to get really present with yourself and know that this is a form of like how you show up, how you communicate, and hopefully it fills you up, eventually you're going to run out of steam. And plus your customers or your friends or who you're communicating to, your teammates, they feel it. They know you're not really there. And that's really hard to work with somebody that doesn't feel present.
What would be your approach if, and this just occurred to me just now, Carl, what would be your approach if you ran into an organization that was governed by fear, where fear was the primary motivating tool, and the organization came to you and they said, look, this isn't working, we need to change. Where would you start? How would you change the organizational culture from fear to empowerment?
That's a really deep question. Because, you know, obviously it's how big is the organization? Are the leaders willing to change things like that? One of my first criteria, and then I'll answer your question, when I try to see if a client is a good fit for me or my teammates, is do they want to change? And part two is, are they open to doing the work? You know, because it will be work and it will be change, and change can be hard or scary, or there's a lot of unknown, and it's really hard not to get pulled back into what we've always known for however long it's been. So I'm kind of a firm believer that it needs to start with the top, the people that can walk the talk. So hopefully in your example, let's say there's three people in the leadership team, we can have a couple heart-to-hearts. It might be, I walk with each one of them. I say that because I have found that if I'm driving next to someone or I'm walking next to someone, there's a different way of being and there's a different way of getting people to start to share versus I'm sitting across from you or we're at a conference room table or something like that. So I think the first one would be, you know, does the leadership have this aha? And if they do, do they want to do something about it? And if they do, then there's probably some individual plans for them to be aware of what their blind spots might be. And that might be bringing in a different coach. That might be bringing in a leadership coach, or it might be bringing in somebody that just manages the executive team. It could be me, but like the point is we've got to get the leadership aligned first and make sure they're doing it because they want to, not because they have to. And that's where it gets scary because a lot of times it's like, well, if I don't sell my company for $10 million, it's like, okay, wait, you know, like that's you grabbing the bat. That's fear. That's like, take a step back. What if you could sell your company? What if you didn't have to sell your company? What if you just enjoyed the rest of your life and your employees made a lot of money and you made a lot of money and you were happy every day? Would that be okay? You know, but it's trying to get the team to reframe why they're really there. I think once you have a toehold and you see some movement, I'm always after the team to play ball, whether it's one person or two. And I kind of use them as a pilot project. I might even have a heart-to-heart and I'd say, Dave, look, you know, this is where we're going. I can see that you're bought in. Can you be like my go-to, my poster boy? Can we play around? Can we see if this, because you have the respect of the team, and if they start to see you're doing this, it's going to be a lot easier. Does that sound interesting? And the right person goes, finally, these leaders see me, and finally, these leaders want to make this company better. I knew it could be better. That's how I would start, but it's going to be a lot of like, where do we want to go? Getting clear there, and then committing consistently, reminding ourselves that's where we want to go, because that's where this stuff usually falls down. We get out of the gate, sounds great. A month goes by, we start taking up our old habits again. And if we could just keep recommitting to the destination and seeing it, usually we can get there faster with less heartburn.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that brings to mind that some of the best plans end up going, you know, just fizzling out because the implementation phase was just done so shoddily. You invite Murphy's Law into the plan, at any plan, you took a plan, backup plan A, B, C, and D. You look at every possible thing that could go wrong and you have a contingency plan for that. You just don't put a plan that looks great on paper and put it out there without discovering what could fail with that and then having the backup plan to address it. I bet you there's a lot of organizations that you've discovered in corporations that fail at implementation too.
My lesson learned there, I'm an overbuilder for sure. And I, luckily, as I've gotten older, I'm less of an overbuilder. But I think we can kind of borrow change management or how we implement from the tech industry when they have these development sprints, really agile methodology. You do a little thing, yeah. You check, you do a little thing and check. So you don't do what's called waterfall where you plan it all and then you hope it all works. And I think change, especially in sales organizations or with leadership level, like let's take a little bite and then a little bite. And it's kind of that same thing with a horizon, right? Like you walk a little further, oh, you see more of the horizon, a little bit more versus trying to plan it all from the beginning. And that's kind of the place I've always, I don't want to say misfired, but I overbuild, I overplan, which I think there's value in overplanning. To your point, I know all the contingencies, but the implementation of that plan, if I could give myself and anyone listening advice, is just start. Just start. You know, we're going to have a leadership team meeting once a week and we're going to see how that goes. Or then we're going to invite a couple people into it the next week or whatever it might be, but at least get going, get in the movement of change, and then it'll kind of create more versus waiting until everything's perfect. Lesson learned for sure.
Well, and I think what you mentioned too is you implement and then you evaluate and do ongoing evaluation of that plan. And you do that in the beginning, probably at least monthly. And then you tweak as you need to tweak. But it's always, you know, like you said, it's always good to have all those contingency plans in the back of your head because you could take one of those strategies and that could be the strategy that you need to do to tweak that particular part of the process. So anything else you want to add about your book, your newest book, Iceberg Selling, that you want readers to take away from it?
Yeah. I mean, first, I think just remembering that every human being is an iceberg is important and potentially every situation you're in. And what I mean by that is how often have you shown up and maybe your kid's upset And, you know, you're like, Jimmy, why are you crying? You know, if it's a little kid or if it's a teenager, you're like, what's going on? And if you just kind of made some simple observations, you know, maybe the kid hasn't eaten all day, or maybe he has an ear infection, he's holding his ear, or maybe the teenager, you know, the last few days, they haven't done well on tests and they're not sleeping well. And, you know, there's clues is what I'm trying to say. And the more we see clues, whether they're the obvious ones like we just talked about, or we go deeper and we just start asking better, deeper questions. We go on our walk with our teenage kid. We invite an open dialogue. We close our laptop. We turn off our phone. We engage the person in front of us. If we're talking to a customer, we say, hey, you know, before we start going in here, you know, why are you even, you know, like what solution, what would the solution do for you? How would this change your life? How does this help your company? We get more and more curious. Then what happens is the human relationship starts to grow. And I'm a firm believer that if you look at everything as an iceberg, like I said, whether it's a problem or a person or whatever, and you can start to like look deeper and deeper, you're going to find all these clues. You're going to find these things that you can help on, or at least like the student, meet them where they are. You know, you imagine a student in your world, or when I was younger, I'm not reading the books. I'm not doing well on my tests. There's typos everywhere. The teacher's asking me to stand up and read out loud, and kids are making fun of me, and I'm not working hard enough. That's the message I got. Well, you're not doing your homework. And it's like, no, now that I'm a 50-year-old man, I know that it was because I had dyslexia and I had to come up with coping mechanisms. Imagine how that would have changed me at 6 or 7 or 8 or 9. They say, hey, maybe there's something going on here deeper than you just not working hard enough. So what I would leave all the listeners with is, whether you're selling or communicating, or maybe you have a relative you don't get along with politically or whatever it might be, if you can just take a moment and start to go, I bet there's things underneath that if I started to see would give me more entry points to have a conversation, more ways to connect, more ways to be a human being that is showing up with caring or service or understanding, because the more I understand you, the more you start to understand me. And that's where progress can come from. In the world of sales, that progress means I'm moving this person closer to a sale, which doesn't just mean money. It means I'm going to actually deliver them the thing that's going to make their life better. And yes, when they buy it, money exchanges. And if I'm in sales, maybe I get compensated for my effort. But if we keep getting back to understanding, looking for what's really going on, showing up of service and kind of playing around with this, then I just think you're just a more effective human being, probably a happier human being. And in the world of sales, if any of this is like triggering your salesperson listening, all I would leave you with is imagine if you could build more rapport, have stronger relationships, have stronger lifetime value. You didn't have to chase these customers. They would actually call you. They'd actually share. They'd tell you what was going on. You didn't get ghosted anymore. And that's what we're talking about. Like, your life changes when you start to really spend the extra time to understand what's going on in someone's life or the problem they're really trying to solve. Because that's how I would leave it. Just start thinking about everybody as an iceberg.
Well, you know, I like that too, because what that approach demands that we do is we bear witness to an individual's own personal narrative, their own story. We understand, again, as we talked about, their foundations for living, their core values, and we can meet them where they're at. Sell them a product that aligns with that. It's not only just making a sale, but it's building a relationship in the process.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is, by doing that, as a human being, you're developing that muscle memory. You're developing that skill. So whether it's the next sales call, or your kid comes home frustrated, or it's Thanksgiving dinner, and you know Uncle Bob and you have always fought, and you're able to just be in it differently, because you're so used to, instead of getting all reactive and taking things personally, like, why aren't they buying this? Or why didn't they call me back? To, I wonder what's going on in this person's world where I'm witnessing the way they're showing up or not showing up. You know, why are they angry? Why is he on his third glass of whiskey at Thanksgiving and kind of starting to get out of control? Maybe it's because no one listens to him. You know, who knows what it is? But I think by doing this, you do develop a better muscle memory, a better kind of internal way of being, that things just start to change. At least for me, I feel more connected. I'm able to be more effective. I'm not worn out. I enjoy my life more because I'm connecting all the time. I'm learning. I'm sharing value back and forth, or connection.
You know, it's almost like I hear you saying that the sales call and you closing the sale, if it's handled from a humanistic perspective, can be a spiritual experience.
It can, and it usually takes care of itself. You know, there's no more, well, Dave, what do I need to do to get you in the car today? Dave now says, this has been great. How do we move forward? Now it's a healthier way to get to the outcome that everybody wanted anyway. And yeah, it can fill you up. If you're probably wired where connection and solving people's problems and being of service and getting that feedback from somebody where you see how you've helped them fills you up, then absolutely, this is going to help accelerate that.
So if we can emphasize that approach, if an organization can emphasize that humanistic approach, the bottom line pretty much is going to take care of itself.
That's been my experience. You know, my little asterisk there is sometimes I work with early stage startup companies where they don't quite have like L.L. Bean, their first boots leaked. So if they wouldn't have fixed those leaky boots, we wouldn't have L.L. Bean today. So sometimes when our companies are young or they're starting to grow, we have leaky boots. So you can be the best salesperson in the world, but you can only sell so many leaky boots. For me, you got to make sure those foundations are in place. But when they are and your team starts to act like this within their own team, within departments and how they sell, the whole energy, the whole success of the company, in my opinion, has always seen improve and become more and more healthy and more successful.
Well, you know, it's like in the human service field, everybody's worried about bed utilization rates because you have to maintain a certain percentage of full beds so that you get full funding. One of the things that usually frustrated me about that is that you have to think of the clients that you have the resources to deal with as a staff. If you're bringing in clients where the organization or the staff don't have the training or the resources to deal with, it's going to be a revolving door of clients in and out that door. I used to tell my students, if you have a good admissions policy where you're very clear in terms of who you want to attract as a patient or as a client, and you can match those needs to the resources that the organization has to offer, you're never going to have to worry about bed utilization rate. But if you're just bringing in warm bodies, then it's going to be like, again, akin to that hamster just spinning on a wheel going nowhere. It's going to be a revolving door of clients.
And it's hard to live that way for your staff and your clients or your customers. That's not an optimal experience or an optimal way to live your life or your company's life. We only have so much time too. Like, don't you want to be doing what you want to do and enjoying what you want to do the best you can? I do. So yeah, I think the more you can change that paradigm of stress or anger, or a scarcity mindset, you know, we got to do this or else, and we can start to shift and get clear on our values and aligning and bring the right customers in, then a lot of good things happen.
Absolutely. So are there any other takeaways you want to leave our listeners with today? You've left us with a lot, but if there's the penultimate takeaway, Carl, that you want to leave our listeners with today, what would that be?
Well, definitely, I would still say the iceberg, but I will tell you one of the parts of iceberg selling, and it's just to promote it for a second. It's a short, easy, fun read. And it's on Audible too, and you can listen to it in about 2 hours. And like I said, it's accessible, and there's a lot of like bite-sized pieces and fun stories, and it's entertaining and it's valuable. But one of the things I would say is I talk about four mindsets, and one of them is what I call ownership mindset, or even drivership mindset. They're actually two. They're very related. But what I'd like to leave you with is, if you're feeling at all inspired, I want you to think about this, that you can be the author of your own story. And that's ownership mindset. Having that mindset where you're like, wait a minute, if I want to change, I can actually do that. That is in my power to change. And I'd like you to think about that. And the second part, to kind of go, oh, I wonder if I'm there or not, is what I call drivership mindset. Are you the driver of the car of what you want to do every single day? Or are you the passenger? And we know if you're the passenger, maybe you get to change their music. You know, and maybe you go, hey, can we pull over? I need to go to the bathroom. But that's about all the power you have as a passenger, right? As the driver, you get to decide how fast you go, which lane you're in. Am I going to get off on this exit? Where am I going? So if any of this iceberg selling thing inspires you to kind of try it, then I would couple it with this concept of being an owner, an ownership mindset, and writing your own story. And this concept of driving your own car. Be the driver of the change that you want to own and get into it. And even if it's just like, I'm just going to do something different today. Like, I'm going to own whatever it is. I'm going to own that I'm going to walk 5 minutes after dinner with my son and hopefully connect, or 10 minutes. I'm just going to try that. But I guess I would just say, if you're inspired by some of the things we've been talking about today, pick up that ownership mindset, pick up that drivership mindset and make it yours. See if you can't kind of drive, pun intended, drive it forward for yourself.
Yeah, just empower yourself to create the reality of your own choosing.
Absolutely. That's how I would leave everybody. You have the power to do it, and I'm on your side. Go make it happen.
Ram Dass has said, one of the greatest spiritual teachers of all time, we're all just walking each other home. And that could apply to any type of organizational concept. I think whether it's sales, whether it's manufacturing, if we can align ourselves with those individuals that we want to bring in as clients and they see that we are definitely have their best interest at heart, it's just going to make the bottom line, it's not even going to be an issue. It's just going to take care of itself.
100% agree. Well said.
Thank you. And my last question for you, Carl, is if individuals want to get in touch with you, besides going to your website, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, I would say an easy one to remember is Iceberg Selling. If you think iceberg and selling, go to icebergselling.com. It's all about the book. There's links to me. You can send me a message. I reply to all of them. Connect with me on LinkedIn. Happy to do that. So, you know, there's a couple ways, you know, improving sales performance and then .com and icebergselling.com. Those are probably the easiest way to find me. All the books are on Amazon and other wherever books are sold. They also have audio versions. And there's a lot of times there's PDFs of them on the site or different chapters. I'm definitely more one that likes to give my content away and let people pick it up if they want. So yeah, reach out if you'd like to start a conversation or just share a thought. I'd love the opportunity to respond. And I'd say thank you too.
Well, thank you, Carl. And thank you for being just a great guest contributor today on the Teaching Journeys podcast. I had a really great time talking with you. So thanks for making the time for me. And for our audience.
This was great. I love talking with you. It's always been fun every time we've talked.
Likewise. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.